Well, let's call this November 8th, 2021 Commission meeting to order. Hold on a second. Am I being heard out there?
Yes, sir.
Great. All right. Our first order of business is the consent agenda. Is there questions or comments?
I don't. Sean answered a question I had earlier today, so I'm okay.
I don't have any. Will?
Just one item on delinquent accounts. How are we doing on arrearages, and do we have an update on that?
Actually, Will, Shanna's going to give an update under staff reports.
Oh, great. But we'll wait then. That's fine. So do we have a motion?
I move that we accept the consent agenda.
I'll second the motion.
It's been moved and seconded to accept the consent agenda for November the 8th, 2021. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
All right. Thank you. Agenda revisions. Sean, do we have any?
Yes, we will have an executive session today that will be held to discuss potential litigation with legal counsel representing the PUD pursuant to RCW 42.30.110, and we do not expect any action.
Great. Thank you. Comments from the public. Do we have any, Sean?
Nothing in the chat, but if anybody would like to make a comment, please give me your name now.
Hi. If I could?
Go ahead, Paul.
Thanks. Yeah, my name is Paul Thicket, and I moved to Port Angeles earlier this year, and I'm a PUD customer living in Port Angeles East. I was a PUD commissioner for over 10 years at Thurston PUD and had lots of fun down there getting them into the water business. So I'm just curious, interested in learning how you do business, and I thought I'd watch in today. And
we lost you, Paul.
Ever need help with water, let me know. But I'm having fun being retired and playing with grandkids, enjoying the beauty of this area. So thanks for letting me listen in and giving you my two bits.
Okay, welcome, Paul. Thurston is just a water utility, right?
Yes. Yes, and they've tried to get electric authority a few times, which is a long, long story and probably more you want to hear today.
No, that's okay. I think we've heard it. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Paul. Welcome.
Welcome, Paul.
Are there others?
Any other comments from the public?
All right, Will.
Hearing none, Will.
Okay, good. We'll move on to business items. Our first business item is Resolution 2218-21, adopting the Electric Operating Fund, Water Operating Fund, and Wastewater Operating Fund budgets. Sean and Ruth.
Yeah, I'm going to kick it over to Ruth first. Here, Will, she's going to go through the changes on a PowerPoint presentation, and I'll go over the resolution with the board.
Thanks, Sean. Am I able to share my screen?
Yep, you can share it.
Okay.
Great. There you go.
Okay, great. Well, good afternoon, commissioners, and welcome, everyone. Today, we'll be presenting the final revision of the 2022 budget. If at any point you have any questions, please feel free to jump in. Here we have the budget changes since the October work session. First, labor and benefits increased due to our succession planning for safety. In addition, we added additional standby pay for water and increased their overtime. This, of course, affects taxes and benefits, which increased proportionately. Next, insurance has increased. PERMS provided us a cost estimation, and we needed to add an additional $10,000 for cybersecurity premiums. Next, With changes in our safety department, we'll be discontinuing our contract with Columbia REA, and that's who currently facilitates our safety meetings. Next, IT needed to increase their consulting budget by $10,000, and that is for software and hardware installations. Next, Water had an additional draw this year on one of their public works board loans, and that increased their annual debt service for 22. Lastly, under capital, we'll be shipping off one of our failing mobile substation transformers to have that reconditioned and repaired. The district has two mobile substation transformers, and those allow us to keep things running while we de-energize the fixed substation so that we can do maintenance. And they're also used in case the fixed substations fail.
Can I jump in with a question here, Ruth?
Sure thing.
On contractual services, I think we were sharing conduct of our safety meetings with, I guess, this Columbia REA. How are we going to handle that going forward?
Go ahead, Sean.
So well, our plan is we believe that we will have a retirement in the safety department next year. And so when we provide for an overlap with a through succession planning, we plan to have the new incumbent take over the services that Columbia REA was performing so that we can hopefully have a fully in-house compliant safety program without needing any external service.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks, Sean. Okay, so here we have the summary for the electric division showing actuals for 2020, our revised projections for 21, and our updated proposed budget for 22. Our 21 projections for electric have changed as we're anticipating $250,000 more in sales and a proportional increase in purchase power of $58,000. There were also additional adjustments for labor and benefit costs, a decrease of $17,000. O&M costs increased by $51,000. Capital, a reduction of $85,000. And that all resulted in a revised projected net change in operating reserves for 21 of negative $159,000 versus the previous amount of -$401,000. For 22, the previously mentioned additions and subtractions result in a revised net change in operating reserves of $77,000 versus the previous amount of $289,000. For water, the 21 projections changed due to an increase of $25,000 in labor and benefits. And then for 22, additional labor and benefits and debt service resulted in a revised net change in operating reserves of $443,000 versus the previous amount of $617,000. For wastewater, there really was no material change.
Synopsis okay. Of the capital for water, that's a big increase.
It is. They're borrowing a significant amount of money next year as well to help pay for all that. Okay, so our final slide here shows all three divisions' budgets for 22, and this is what will be included in the 2022 budget resolution. And I think Sean's going to present that next.
Yeah, so in August of this year, the board approved Resolution 220621, which established the electric rate schedules for calendar year 22 and 23. And then prior to that, you had adopted resolution 218720 in December 2020 that included the rates for the water and wastewater utilities through 24. And so all of those rate schedules and approvals are incorporated into this year's budget. And so staff recommends adopting resolution 221821, adopting the electric operating fund, water operating fund, and wastewater operating budgets as presented for calendar year 2022. And that last slide that Ruth showed there just a moment ago, that's included with the budget or with the resolution budget in the board packet. This slide.
Muted, sorry. Do we have comments or questions or a motion?
No, I think you covered it pretty well the last time and again this time.
I agree. I don't have any questions, Will.
Yeah, we've talked about this in public meetings, so I think we've kind of massaged it already. So do we have a motion?
I can't read the I have my agenda to the left of my screen. Could you release the screen so that I can see the
I got it. I move that we pass resolution 2218-21 adopting the 2022 budgets.
I second.
Seems to be a little discrepancy here. We got 2218. And then in the later down, it says 2212-21. Is 2218 correct?
It is correct, Will. It's 2218-21.
Okay, so we're scratched the 12. All right, it's been moved and seconded to approve resolution 2218-21, which adopts the 2022 Electric Operating Fund, Water Operating Fund, and Wastewater Operating Fund budgets as finally determined. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, so next we have resolution 2220-21 authorizing the disposal of surplus property. Steve?
Okay, we've got a list of quite a few pieces of old equipment here that we're trying to surplus. For the first time, we actually had a column where we estimated the value. And as you can see, some of it's not worth anything. Some of it's minimal amounts, $50, $100. All of this equipment is pretty antiquated. These iPads are first generation iPads. Some of them are actually broken. Some of these power edges and Dells or old towers that we had that we haven't used probably for at least 4 or 5 years. The Intel Nooks are the little bitty PCs that we switched to at that time, and these have now run their useful life for us as well. So we're proposing to surplus all this material. And, any questions?
Steve, if we don't end up getting any bids on some of these antiquated computers, would there be any place that we could potentially donate them to education or...
We've tried to do that in the past, but this stuff is so old that actually schools don't want them. We tried to do that in years past. Probably about 10 years ago we could do that because things weren't advancing as fast as they are now. But a lot of the stuff that we have nowadays, the schools don't want it, and the schools have budgets for much better equipment than this. So
I understand.
So, Steve, on this, the Apple items on there, Apple will – give you credit for old these too old for that even or
these are too old even for that. Yeah. Any of the old equipment that we could actually trade in like we've done with iPhones and newer iPads, we've done that already, and this is just stuff that's beyond the trade in time frame.
Okay. Thank you.
And we have, just so you know, we've pulled the hard drives out of all these computers, so we're not surplusing things with district data on them. So.
And if they can't be sold, I'm assuming they'll be recycled or?
Right. Well, pretty much that place that's in the Blinn Bypass, that's a recycle for old computer equipment and monitors as well. So.
Thank you, Steve. I move that we accept resolution. Am I jumping the gun, Will?
No, go ahead. That's great.
I move that we accept resolution 2220-21 authorizing the disposal of surplus property.
I second the motion.
It's been moved and seconded to approve resolution 2220-21 authorizing the disposal of surplus property consisting of a variety of inoperable or obsolete computer laptops, cameras, iPads, software disks, desktops, and printers. These items combined have a total estimated value of $1,590. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Steve. All right, our next item is Resolution 2221-21, establishing titles and monthly salary ranges for staff employees and rescinding Resolution 2212-21. Jamie?
Yes. Hi, you guys. How's everyone?
Good.
I am here to ask the board to adopt resolution number 2221-21. This resolution would take effect January 1 of 2022. Traditionally, we've brought this after the new year, but this year we wanted to be proactive and, be able to be a couple steps ahead. So, changes made to those staff salary ranges include a 3% adjustment to the ranges, and this aligns with our Milliman compensation study that we presented to the board in January of 2020, that the consistent growth keeps our ranges from getting stagnant or where we're having a giant increase when we do our next compensation study. So their data supported the steady increase in those just to keep us in line with the market. And then we have a couple positions that we are looking at regrading, and those include our network administrator, our customer service supervisor, broadband supervisor, controller and auditing officer, as well as our finance manager and treasurer. And you guys had those edits on your example there. So, any questions?
I was talking to Sean this morning, and he reminded me of that study, and I maybe I should reiterate that. As I understand it, we had a consultant come in and look at all the different positions and to give us appropriate salary ranges so that we stay competitive in the electric utility industry. Mm-hmm. We understand that the salaries may not jive with some of the local salaries, but remember that we're competing in a statewide or region-wide market for these talented folks, and therefore I support these new salary ranges.
Thank you, Rick.
Other comments or questions? You know, I guess it's we have to attract the best people from a somewhat limited skill pool, and we have to retain those people. How are we doing on retention?
I would say, during the pandemic, actually attracting people, which is a surprise compared to what you're hearing out, from other entities. But we were able to staff some positions that can take us anywhere from 6 months to a year. So I don't know if it's maybe the flexibility or people seeking a different lifestyle during the pandemic, we were able to fill. You know, on the flip side, though, it was kind of 2018 and 2020 when we did see, I believe it was about 5 staff employees venture off and leave the district. You know, we traditionally have employees that come on board and they retire here with 35, 45 years of service. So I think we traditionally do a great job at retaining those people. But for other reasons, the easiest one we could identify was pay. that during that time frame in 18 and 2020, we did have a small handful of staff employees leave the district and go on.
And you've given us a range of salaries, minimum to maximum. Is there a target that we're shooting for to, you know, to reward performance, but retention and attraction, all that stuff?
Absolutely.
Goes?
Yeah, we have our staff salary program that really kind of guides when and where people should hit kind of that market target is what we like to call that. And that's that center column of numbers there in the staff salary ranges. And that is a number we're always looking for and is truly used in the comparables when a company like Milliman comes in. Yes, those employees that might have 30 years of service in the same position, you might see them higher in the ranges, but that's just because they stayed in their position, you know, they've performed well, and so they're going to be up on the higher end over time.
Okay, thank you. Other comments, questions, or a motion?
I'm good.
I move that we accept resolution 2221-21, establishing the titles and monthly salary ranges for staff employees, and rescinding resolution 2212-21.
I'll second the motion.
It's been moved and seconded to approve resolution 2221-21. Establishing titles and monthly salary ranges for staff employees, and rescinding resolution 2212-21. Too many numbers.
Okay.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, thank you. Thanks, Jamie. All right, our next item here is the BPA post 2028 contract discussion. I was tied up at Energy Northwest and didn't get to attend that Tuesday's session. Did we have any discussion on that?
Yeah, I do. I attended the session on the about 13, what, just after the last meeting with the BPA PPC provider of choice. The nature of the presentation was on cost management, so this is one I've been looking forward to for quite a few months, given my background with cost management on hydro projects. And, you know, I thought it was a lot of fine words and everything, platitudes about how we're going to work together and control cost and so forth, but it didn't find much meat. PPC, Mike Dean gave part of the presentation, then BPA. When the BPA guy was talking, on one of his slides, slide 25 actually, is really important and worth reading, and I really recommend that you guys take a look at this, because on slide 25, it's talking about cost management, of course, and they're trying to justify part of what I'm about to read is why they don't want to do off-ramps and why they don't want to have anything less than a 20-year contract. But essentially what they say is if the costs are due to uncontrollable factors, then very little can be done. Further, BPA's controllable costs are a tiny fraction of BPA's exposure to uncontrollable costs. Tiny fraction of their uncontrollable cost is what they can control. Now, to me, this is a pretty glaring statement because it basically points out what a lot of us have known for a long time, is some of the core cost issues with BPA, they believe they can't control. Now, of course, they'll say that things like servicing principal and interest on their debt is an uncontrollable cost. And you say, well, sure, once you incur the cost, but no one says you're obligated to make an expense in the first place. It's like, well, like a credit card. You're obligated to pay it once you use it, but you're not obligated to use it all the time on everything. And so I feel this is a pretty telling statement, and I've submitted a comment to the process team to tell us a little bit more about why they think things are uncontrollable and why they don't think that they can do anything about it, because I believe you can. It's things that they classically like to avoid talking about, cost of the hydro system, you know, I'm well-versed in. And the other thing is, the irony here is that they do cut back on the budgets for the Bureau of Reclamation and the Corps of Engineers. They don't 100% fund their budgets, and so they're already practicing something that they actually are denying they can do right here. So I think that's something that we've got to pay attention to and so forth. And, you know, I invite other people's observations of this and so forth. But that was my main point of concern that I would certainly like to share with the commissioners and staff. And I've already talked to Sean a bit about this. But anyway, I don't know what your guys' take is on this, but I'd be curious for, you know, feedback here.
Did they state these uncontrollables? I know from recent history it's heat domes and polar vortexes and market fluctuations and so on, but did they quantify that? How much is uncontrollable?
Not in this presentation, but in previous presentation, you know, they've showed us those pie charts and so forth. And yeah, some of the things like the price of a power on the open market is not controllable. But what the internal costs, though, they basically, you know, they've got IPR costs and non-IPR costs and so forth. And they break that down into major categories, Will. But, you know, and I guess the other interesting thing is they have something called an asset management strategy, which looks at thousands, and this is in accordance with an ISO accounting standard, that looks at thousands of widgets in terms of their life cycle and when to repair them and replace them and all this kind of stuff. And yet they don't roll those things up at a project level so you can understand the benefit-cost ratio of an asset, a major asset, not a transformer, but a whole dam or something. So anyway, not so much detail here, but some detail in previous conversations or presentations.
There were two requests from the customers. One was a direct customer participation in power asset management, and the other was for Bonneville to move potentially more to the model that the Corps has with their customers in WAPA rather than the model that we've got here. I asked PPC to send me some more information about that relationship between the Corps and in the WAPA region, and I'm still working my way through that paper. That's all I got, Will.
Okay, thank you. More on that topic. Good discussion. Let's see, the next session is tomorrow, right?
Correct.
Good. Well, we'll make sure to get in on that one. All right, next item is correspondence communication. Sean, do we have any?
Nothing today, Will.
Okay, great. Then we'll move on to commissioner reports. Jim, you want to lead it off? You give a pretty good report already. But
yeah, that would be my commissioner report.
Okay.
Put in one place or the other. I guess one thing that, and I guess my comment sitting back on this thing is that when we're considering a 20-year contract, to have someone tell you that they can only control a tiny fraction of their cost on a system that they won't price out initially anyway, you're doing this every 2 years through a FERC arrangement, you know, strikes me as a business principle rather bizarre. And there's other commissioners around the state that I've talked to that feel the same way. So, and some of the folks in like WAPAG feel that way too. It's just, you know, what do you do about it? But I think we should take an aggressive approach, like in the comment that Rick made about some sort of better interface for the Corps. I absolutely believe that's true. And actually, it's highly unusual for the Corps to have a partnership relationship as they do with BPA and the PUDs, where we're paying them for their service, and yet we don't have a seat at their monthly or quarterly program reviews and so forth, like other cost-sharing partners in the Corps of Engineers do and insist on, and they have a great working relationship. But it's basically unheard of here with between the Corps, Bureau, BPA, and the PUDs.
At the WAPEG, last WAPEG meeting, it was discussed to have a public power caucus about these issues. Has that got legs yet? I haven't heard anything.
Actually, it was Kim Thompson with BPA approved it, Will, last week, and they're allowing public power to caucus until I believe it was March, and then public power has to present their list of options at that time.
Okay, great. Thank you. Rick, did you have something?
Since last meeting, I was went to that Bonneville Provider of Choice meeting. I also went to Northwest River Partners annual meeting. Well, I didn't go to it, but I participated via Zoom. Both were good meetings. We've already talked about the provider of choice, and not much to say about the annual meeting. That's all I've got, Will.
Okay, thank you. Well, I spent week over at Energy Northwest. We had a combined board of directors, executive board meeting, and the Public Power Energy Forum, so it was a full week. The just one topic, it pops out based on those uncontrollable things. During the heat dome in eastern Washington, both the Nine Canyon wind farm and the Horn Rapids solar farm were shut down on high temperatures. It appears that wind turbines shut down on high lube oil temperatures. So there was a discussion there. I asked the question, well, what do you do about that when your renewables are not available when you need them? And they're looking into that, perhaps put more cooling on lube oil or something like that. Anyway, that's to be continued. For Energy Northwest, the CEO gave gave his report. 80% of the employees at Energy Northwest have been vaccinated. Interesting that they did an internal survey and only 65% owned up to being vaccinated, and they attributed this to privacy concerns. People don't want to give away their information. They're not yet subject to the vax mandate, but they think that's going to happen in the short term, that they will have to be subject to the mandate. They're negotiating union contracts there. In fact, they've been in negotiation for 2 years. They've operated 1 year without a contract, and that's in arbitration now, and they're awaiting the arbitrator's decision. We approved an expansion of spent fuel oil storage to 72 additional canisters. If you've been to Energy Northwest, you see those very large 85-ton concrete canisters with stainless steel canisters in internal sitting on pads which are 12, 15 feet thick, and that's going to continue until there's some solution to spent fuel. Let's see what else we have here. They're going to take a shutdown for a low-pressure turbine balance shot. This is the big turbine that or part of it that drives the generator. They replaced this during the last refueling outage, and as they started up, there is some vibration there. It's not to a level of concern, but Siemens is recommending that they do a balance shot. This is where you actually put a weight on the turbine rotor based on an analysis and so on. Interesting, at Washington State University is talking about starting up a simulator center for new nuclear. This would be the SMR programs, and they're going to provide courses with a simulator for operators and so on for that. The chief nuclear officer's report, 131 days online at record generation. And then the ESD, Engineering Services and Development, already talked about the gearbox failures and the high temperature trips. It was kind of brought out that a lot of these wind farms and even solar farms are reaching their 20 years old. And before we get to 2045, they're probably most of them are going to have to be replaced. And so they're looking at a game plan to do that for Nine Canyon and the solar farms. I'm going to try to skip through this. Oh, the Ruby Flats Solar, that's the new development of the 150-megawatt solar farm. They're out signing power purchase agreements to take the power from that facility. They're working with Bonneville for interconnection facilities. It should start construction in the second quarter of 22 and be complete by August of 22. Let's see what else here. Well, I'll talk about the SMR stuff later. The after the meeting and the meeting itself, we did some policy changes for the executive board. We did some, we're still got an excellence in governance task force that's going to come forward with some more recommendations for changes there. Then we've moved into the Energy Forum, which is, you know, it's an annual event put on by Energy Northwest. And it covers kind of the whole spectrum of Energy Northwest activities and public power concerns. The we had opening remarks by Bob Schutz, the CEO of Energy Northwest, of Energy Northwest. We had an interesting keynote speaker talking about cybersecurity. This guy had been a consultant for the FBI. Actually, he'd been a member of the FBI and then moved on to be a consultant. And he talked about, of course, things like these sessions always scare the heck out of me. I go home and change all my passwords and use a multi-factor authentication and so on. And I can't remember any of them. But interesting point he came up with was that the dark web is the third largest economy in the world, right after the U.S. and China. And he gave examples of people can go on hackers or people looking to misbehave, can get on the dark web, buy information like your phone number, your email address, and so on for as little as 50 cents. And that can move up to stealing all the information on there that's on to do with your personal identity for just a few dollars. So that gives you an illustration of how many millions of people are shopping the dark web. Then we had a panel discussion on panel discussion on workforce, which talked about what we just talked about, attracting and retaining people and how to bring new people into the utility business and how to train them with internships and so on. To me, the most interesting session was a next generation nuclear. And this was Jason Herbert, who's an Energy Northwest vice president, public affairs. We had Greg Cullen. I'm sorry, Jason he's presently moved into public affairs dealing with new nuclear. He was a lobbyist for Energy Northwest and Olympia. We also had Greg Cullen, who's vice president, and Kevin North, who's the general manager of Grant. And as you know, Grant has a memo of understanding with Energy Northwest with NuScale for small modular reactor. They also have a memo of understanding with X Energy for the their version of an SMR. X Energy that's the high temperature gas cool. We used to call them gumball reactors, where the fuel is encased in graphite and so on. Kevin North gave a pitch there. They're trying to actually peddle the power from a potential SMR installation that they plan to install, and they're going through the analysis now. But currently, that's their plan. And he asked that any utilities that are interested in participating in that to contact him. So I guess it's getting legs. Anyway, interesting forum this year. lot of good information, and there was a lot of good attendance in person. Of course, we had to comply with COVID measures, but also virtually there were a lot of participation. Any questions on that or comments? Okay, well, we'll move on to staff report. Sorry.
Yeah, I got a question. Rick, did the Northwest Rivers Partners, did they have any briefing materials or anything?
No, sir. It was kind of let's pat each other on the back, and they had a speaker from New York, Gil, I can't recall his last name. But no, I didn't print anything up for the meeting.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, we'll move on to staff reports. We have the ARPA assistance and DNP update. Shanda, I'm sorry.
Yes, thank you, Shanda. I'm Shanda, the customer service supervisor here at the district. I just created a brief overview of how we've been handling the past due accounts since the moratorium lifted a month ago. It seemed a little overwhelming at the time. It had been 18 months since we had disconnected people from not paying their bill. And we did have several customers that owed 18 months of power. But we've been working with these customers as much as possible, and I just kind of created a short PowerPoint so I can show you the path that we chose to take to approach these accounts. I have to say that the path that we've chosen is very comparable to every other district and every other utility that I've spoken to in, some meetings, surveys, group emails with several other supervisors at other utilities. And I'm very confident in knowing that we've done everything we can and are doing basically the same thing as every other utility. I feel like we've had some ups and downs, but mostly successes over the last month. It's been a month. I'm going to share my screen so I can go over the information that I've gathered with you. Okay, so post-moratorium. I was going to give you an overview of how we approached disconnects in the first place. It's been quite a while, and we had to retrain our entire staff on how to even create the disconnects for the field personnel and for the in-office personnel, on how we speak to the customers and all the several options that we give them, and how we prepare these accounts to ultimately disconnect if that's what it ends up having to happen. In resuming the disconnects, we spent months. We were, as you know, the moratorium kept getting extended and extended and extended over time. So we were prepared to resume these accounts at any given time. And as months went by, we kind of recreated our plan over and over, making every attempt we could possibly think of to get payments made on these accounts. We spent these months notifying customers using every avenue we could think of. The customer service representatives made hundreds of personal phone calls to these accounts to determine if we weren't reaching them, if they had mail returned, if their phones were disconnected. We could identify those accounts. We sent door notifications to houses that we could not reach by phone to ensure that they got notification prior to resuming the disconnect. Along with their regular bills and past due notices, we included special messages on these bills reminding people that the moratorium was going to be closing. And we sent extra paper notifications between billing periods in different color envelopes to try to attract their attention to their account. We spent months of advertising the assistance programs available in Crown County on our website, and through social media, and through these special mailings. And for the last several months, we've been mailing the actual assistance applications directly to our past due customers, along with the mailing envelopes and instructions on how to apply. I feel like we did, everything in our efforts and everything in our power to reach these customers. Obviously, disconnecting is the absolute last thing that we wanted to do with them. So as an example of how we are able to put messages on our bills, On the right, you see here is an image of one of our bills, and there's a special section here for messages. Through the months of May, June, and July, we had been notified that our local agency, Serenity House, was given a very large grant, and that had funding for our customers that had past due payments. That same money that they got helped these customers with rent as well, so they could get help on their utility bills and help on their rent. This funding was for tenants only, not for homeowners. So we still promoted Olympic Community Action because they can help homeowners, tenants, really any of our customers. So for August and September, we were promoting Olympic Community Action as well as guiding people to our website that lists all of the local agencies. There's about a dozen active agencies at any given time that'll assist with the utility bills. On the August and September bills messaging, we reminded all customers that the moratorium was ending and to please just go to the website, call in, ask for assistance. In October, we continued to notify that disconnects had begun and to get our customers to try to go to our website to ask for assistance if needed. Our customers have many, many options that to work with the customer service representatives to avoid a disconnect. And this is what I wanted to explain to you all, just in case you end up with any of these customers. These are the options that they're given. And basically, if a customer is communicating with us, we're working with them. The goal is to collect on the account and keep power going in a logical way so that payments are coming in or they're actively applying for assistance so that they don't have to get disconnected. So if a customer is actively working with Olympic Community Action or Serenity House or another agency and they've turned in their application and they're being processed, I will delay that disconnect for a little while because I know that the local agencies are very overwhelmed with applications right now. They're very willing to pick up the phone when I call them and reply promptly to my emails if I ask about a specific customer to verify that they have, in fact, submitted their application. And they get back to me very quickly and say, yes, we got it. We're in the middle of processing it. We need this and this and this from them, and we can get them taken care of. So kind of working as a liaison between the assistance agencies and their account here. We will create a payment plan with a customer for ideally 3 or 4 months, but I have been working up to 6 months on the payment plans with customers with a little bit of a larger balance in an effort for them to have the ability to make that payment over time, especially the longer-term customers that we know aren't going anywhere, that just have stumbled upon these harder times and just need a little bit more time. We have the in-house American Rescue Plan Assistance Grant that we got from the county that has come in to so many accounts. I have a breakdown of how many people that's helped a little bit later, but it's been very nice to have that in-house application to be able to process in a pinch on a day of a disconnect. The goal is to obviously to collect and to keep the customer going instead of disconnecting and sending them to collections and having them reconnect in a different name or to have to go without power. It's the best thing that we've found that is for us and the customer. As an example of the payment plan, I just wanted to lay that out so that if you're approached with someone who's trying to create one, this is how we're calculating these to make it easy on the customer service reps and the customer. So the customer has a total balance owed to us of about $1,200, and their past due is $1,000. And the customer calls and they say, I cannot pay $1,000. I absolutely don't have $1,000. And they have not applied for assistance. And it's kind of down to the wire and they need to make that decision. So what we do is we take that total balance of the account of $1,200. We divide it by 4 if we're putting them on a 4-month payment plan. And to initiate that contract with us, to initiate that payment plan, they make that first payment. Then they're sent a contract notice, a letter letting them know that those remaining $300 payments they'll see tacked on to their next 3 bills. That might seem like a lot, but they're making it work. We're seeing those payment plan payments come in, and we are also at that time encouraging the customer to also apply for all of agency assistance resources. Because often they create their payment plan, and that then they're given the information on how to apply for the agencies, and they come back and they are able to pay off their payment plan with assistance. We've seen that too just in the last few weeks. So we stopped the disconnects in March of 2020, and we resumed them just a little over a month ago. And over that time, we've created 89 remote disconnects, which are disconnects from the office. They're not in field. These are just some statistic numbers for you. Of those 89 remote disconnects, 57 of those customers paid or entered a payment plan, or they applied for and received energy assistance quickly, or they were disconnected and reconnected within the same day or the next day, usually with the ARPA funding. Of those 89 remote disconnects, 32 of those customers are still disconnected or services reconnected under a new name. Over these last 18 months, despite our efforts to reach the customers, there have been people that have moved out of the area, and those kind of things that we would not have known had we not disconnected the power. Then we get a phone call from a new tenant or new owner. And a lot of those times, if it's a new owner or a new tenant, we are encouraging them to take over service as of when they moved in, not that moment. So we're collecting as much as we can on the debt that they truly owe to the district. For in-field disconnects, we've created 36 over the last month, and of those 36 in-field disconnects, 21 of those customers paid while the personnel was there or shortly after or reconnected that same day or the next day. And 15 of those customers are still disconnected or service was reconnected under a new name. As you can see, we're doing a lot more remote disconnects than in-field disconnects. And over the last several months, we have changed the meters in the field of a lot of these accounts. A lot of accounts in general, as you know, to AMI meters, and those are meters that we can disconnect and reconnect here at the office. The safety of our field personnel is extremely important to us, and we felt it was safe for everybody to, you know, focus on the remote disconnects or at least get those meters in those accounts so that it went quickly for the customer and safe for our field personnel. So how we're laying out our disconnects is we're doing disconnects Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays. The reason being if somebody is disconnected, they have more days of the week in order to reconnect prior to the weekend beginning. It gives them more time to apply for agencies and more time for us to work with them to ultimately, the goal is to get them reconnected before the weekend, to save overtime funds and to get the customer back in power. In preparation for disconnects, we had an overview meeting with customer service and all field personnel. So everybody was in one meeting knowing exactly how we were going to approach the disconnects and could ask all the questions and hear all the answers between field personnel and office personnel. So everybody knew exactly what to expect and how the path of one disconnect would go. As I said, the personal safety of all of our employees and the customers are of our utmost importance. So we, Larry helped put together a safety meeting for de-escalation, and that happened on September 30th for customer service reps and field personnel to keep our conversations with customers going smoothly and heading in a good direction and staying under control. The focus on the last month for our disconnects have been customers who owe the district more than 2 months of service. Those are the older, larger accounts are the accounts we focused on over the last month. And we, through that whole month, pushed even harder for customers to apply for agency assistance and sent more notices that were more urgent. Going forward, we will continue to make our personal phone calls, the robot computer generated phone calls that I send out, and the door hangers to customers that we don't have a phone number in file. It's in our best interest to reach them and collect instead of disconnecting. We've found more success with collecting when we reach out with empathy and try to get payments made and try to connect them with the assistance agencies. So as of right now, just a few statistics of our past due residential customer accounts. We have a total of about 29,500 residential accounts. Of these accounts, 1,685 are past due as of last week. But please keep in mind that over 300 of those accounts owe less than $50 of their past due. So we're really looking at more about 1,300 total of past due accounts. The number last week was $491,000 in arrearages, including commercial accounts. And of that total number for residential customers only, including water accounts, about $465,000. But I'd like to point out, which is laid out on the next slide, that although we have $465,000 in the arrearages, we also have $321,500 in unpaid agency guarantees that don't reflect on the arrearages reports yet because we've not yet received the check in the mail from them. I know this number seems a bit large, and it is a little larger than other months, but that is simply because October was such an active month. It was the month that all the customers realized the disconnects were resuming and all began applying for agency assistance, and those local agencies really came through. Olympic Community Action, Serenity House, Squim Community Aid, the St. Vincent de Paul programs, they all really, they were ready, they were prepared. I've been in constant communication with them, and they really started rolling in the promises on these accounts and connecting with the customers. So right now, of that $321,000 owed to us, this is just a breakdown of where this money is coming from. The ARPA is the American Rescue Plan Assistance. That is the grant that Sean got from the county of the $350,000 that we got in the early August. Since then, we've distributed about $190,000 to our customers. This is the assistance that if a customer is disconnected, say at 10 o'clock in the morning, they can literally come by the office, pick up an application, fill it out, put it in the Dropbox and call me, and I will walk out and get it and process it and call the customer and come to an agreement on a payment to be made to reconnect their service. This has been a very important grant that we've been blessed with to keep our customers in power. The Olympic Community Action at this time owes us about $59,000, and that's a mix of a few different programs that they run. They have a LIHEAP program. They have an arrearages program due to COVID. They have a flat $500 that they can award to people affected by COVID, as well as a few other programs. Now, some of our customers that apply with Olympic Community Action don't always get money that all goes to us. This program will help customers with propane. They'll help customers with firewood. They'll help several different avenues. And we usually end up with a portion of that, obviously, to go towards keeping their water and power going. Up until about a month ago, they could only help with electric arrearages, and they very recently, about 3 weeks ago, were given a grant to also help with water. So that's been very helpful, too. The PUD Low Income Grants, which is the previously our senior and disabled citizen low-income program that we ran in-house, we have granted about $34,000 to customers. Well, that's just what's outstanding to us right now. I have the total on another slide coming up. We have Serenity House owes us about $35,000 right now, and they recently transitioned from a program called TRAP, which is Tenant Rental Assistance Program, to ERAP, which is Electric Rental Assistance Program, and which means that they don't just help with tenants anymore, they can also help with homeowners. And this is a huge thing for them. And they're requiring less documents. So the application process is going more easily for the customers. For other miscellaneous agencies, tribes, et cetera, we're owed about $2,600. So right now we have owed us about $321,000 in agency assistance, which is completely normal, like I said. Not worried. The PUD low income discount grants, which was the program that we restructured due to this Clean Energy Transformation Act. We have our applications processed through Olympic Community Action because of the complexity of the applications and the information that has to be gathered per applicant. Previously, our discount program, we processed in-house, and it was a more simple application with just supporting documents on the customer's income. And now we are to turn in several different items for the CETA program. And so we have Olympic Community Action processing those applications for us. What the great thing is about them processing this for us is that many of our customers, a large portion of our customers who have applied for this funding, are also getting funding from several different OLECAP programs that they have never applied for before. Because they're applying for our discount, they're often getting, for instance, $480 for the PUD low income discount, plus another $500 COVID funding, plus another $500 LIHEAP. This is funding that they would have never attempted to apply for before. And we're excited about that. It's obviously getting them a lot more money. And even though the numbers look like they're a little bit low at times, Olympic Community Action has right now about 200 pending applications awaiting proper documents to be turned in by the customers. And they call customers throughout their day. And if I have any questions about a particular customer, if they're up for disconnect soon, they let me know exactly what documents this customer is missing, and I'll call the customer and walk them through submitting it to our Dropbox or to Olympic Community Action, and we come together and get those applications processed. So in June and July, they received about 97 applications, and we distributed about $25,620 of those funds. As you can see, the average per customer in the right column has stayed really even. Each customer that is applying is receiving about $345. And this is a discount that they had been getting on their monthly statement, and now they're getting as one lump sum on their bill. And so we are also taking the extra measures to try to talk customers into signing up for our budget payment program, which benefits them because they pay the same exact amount every month all year, and it's recalculated once per year based off their usage, and it puts their bills more in line with what they were used to before with the discount on their bill, if that makes sense. So they're not just getting that grant of $345 and not paying for a few months, then paying high bills. We're trying to encourage them to set up budget so they're still paying the bills that they were used to before. So as of right now, the funding that we have distributed to OLECAP for our low-income customers, we have spent about $114,000 total. And it's ongoing through at all times. We renew that program every year at the end of the year, but the funding they have now takes us through 2022. For the American Rescue Plan assistance funding that we're doing in-house, the money from the county, we began that program we got the funding in early August. We began it mid-August. I didn't get a single application until the last week of August, simply because we weren't performing disconnects. Customers began applying for assistance once we began notifying that actual disconnects were impending. The total grant we received was $350,000, and as of last week, we've disbursed $190,000. So we still have about $160,000 that we're working with. And as you can see, since we began actually performing disconnects, the number of applications received has risen tremendously. But I still feel like after one entire month of doing disconnects, we have plenty of funding to likely get through an entire other month before we run out of the funds of this program. So that's kind of where we're sitting on all the agency assistance and the disconnects at this time. Like I said, we're kind of approaching it slowly and with a lot of notification so that we can collect over disconnecting at any given time. So if anybody has any questions about that, if I don't have the information right in front of me, I'm happy to gather it and send it to you after. But if you have any questions, let me know.
Yes, Shanda, I have a couple of questions. First, this kind of implies that the payment plan option is kind of needs-based. Is that the case, or can anybody participate in that? You know, it's, I guess there's no fees or interest involved, so people would just like to spread it out to fit it in their personal budget, I assume.
The payment plan option is for people that have a past due balance and that do not want to apply for energy assistance or have been turned down because they are officially over income for energy assistance but don't have the fluid funds to pay their bill. I've really only created payment plans. We have about 80 payment plans that are active right now, and those have been for customers that owe more than 3 months of service, have the money to make a payment now, and are trying to avoid disconnect. So they are people that owe several months of power, and I've had personal conversations with each of them, and I have felt like it's been the best avenue to take with these customers. It's their customers that have to choose between having an excess cell phone, paying rent, or paying us. So we are letting them pay over a few months' time, and I'm monitoring those closely. If they make their initial payment to activate the plan and then miss their second payment, they get two phone calls, and then they're up for disconnect.
So these accounts that are reconnecting under a different name, if we detect that, are we requiring a deposit?
Yes. It depends on the situation. If I look on the county website and the house has sold to a completely different owner, then that's when I have that discussion. I can see right there when they took over ownership of that property. And I talked to them about taking over as of the day that they established owning that property. And for the most part, they're doing that. And it's something that slipped their mind. It's not very many of those. Unfortunately, what I'm seeing with those are people that are disconnecting under a new name are people that may end up going to collections. They moved out of the area, or they just simply will not apply for assistance or acknowledge the bill, and so they're having a friend or family member reconnect under their name. Or we've had a few customers that unfortunately have passed and the family didn't even think to contact us. And so those are all accounts over the last month that we've been rectifying and working really hard on.
Yeah, thank you. Other questions, comments?
Yes, I have one comment and two questions. Seems that you're doing a good job to try to be empathetic, if you will, as you're reaching out to these folks, and I want to support you in that. That's my comment. A question on the disconnects. You talked about residential disconnects. Have there been no business disconnects?
Well, the commercial accounts were not covered by the moratorium. We've been performing commercial disconnects throughout the pandemic.
Okay. I was just trying to get a handle on whether there were an inordinate large number of commercial disconnects.
There are – what I can say about the commercial disconnects is that I was delaying them through the pandemic a bit, giving them extra notification than they had been receiving in a normal situation prior, because we fully acknowledge that a lot of businesses were affected by COVID.
Yeah.
But we also know that there was community funding for businesses, and they just needed to connect. And so they got the phone calls and letters that other customers got, and at any given time, a business account could owe 3 months of power, but no more. And we didn't have to do many disconnects through that time. Unfortunately, a few businesses went under and were eliminated during COVID. Restaurants, hair salons, in-home caregiving, there were a lot of unfortunate commercial accounts that did close and disconnect during the pandemic, but we stayed in communication with them during and were able to connect them with a lot of business resources through the state and through local agencies through that whole time.
Great. Good job. My second question has to do with the on the CETA, the customers that were denied. Did you see any common threads or anything that leads you to believe that it was an issue with the way the program was put together rather than something the customer didn't fulfill?
A lot of the denials of the CETA program were due to either the customer having too low of an energy burden or the customer's actual income being higher than what they had reported prior. With our in-house discount program for many years, we accepted Social Security statements, bank statements, those kind of forms as proof for a customer's income. Where through Olympic Community Action, they require several different items and have more verification abilities and have found that some of the customers had more disposable income than we would have been able to confirm. As well as the CETA program is formulated for customers that are low income and have a higher energy burden. So our customers that have very, very low usage don't qualify for the CETA funding.
That's kind of ironic, isn't it, that a customer, if they don't use enough energy, they wouldn't be wouldn't qualify for a grant.
Yeah.
That doesn't feel right, but that's more a function of how the program was set up. Thank you for your presentation. It was very helpful.
Thank you.
Chanda, are these slides, do we have these yet in an email or something, or will they be posted on in our minutes? Because I can perceive possibly a customer that had an issue with a disconnect calling up a commissioner. And I'd like to, you know, be able to say, hey, look, we had this program, here's all the steps, we kind of like what you just did, but kind of speak with, you know, from a commissioner's, you know, response, because I'm sure you would have already talked to these people probably a dozen times before they call us, but it might be handy to have this in front of us.
Of course. I'm happy to send this as well as the training PowerPoint that I created for the infield personnel and all the customer service reps. In training them on resuming DMPs.
So okay, great.
Good information in there, too.
All right, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, if no other questions, Shanda, good presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Why don't we take a five-minute break before we move on? We got other things to do here, so let's come back at 2:48. How's that?
Works for me.
Okay, our next item is board action items. T, did you capture anything?
Yes, I did, Will. We were requested to upload relevant information or slides about the ARPA assistance programs for the public to either the website and or to record them in the minutes. So I believe that some of this information, if not all, has already been uploaded to the website. I'll check with Nicola, communications officer, to make sure that that's occurred, but I'm pretty sure it's all been uploaded. But if you wish for me to record it in the minutes as well, I can do that.
Jim, what's your preference? You want them in the minutes? No, you're muted, Jim.
I'm trying to think where it would be easiest to find if somebody called me real quick.
I'm wondering if they should just send it directly to the commissioners.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what I was trying to get. So that's the main thing.
Okay, I will obtain that from Chanda, and I will report it on to the commissioners.
Okay. Thank you, T.
You're welcome.
Thank you, T. Okay, we're comments from the public. Sean, do we have any comments?
Yeah, we have one in the chat here. It looks like from Paul Pickett. It says, could you provide a brief update on how the PUD will handle redistricting? And that'll be done at another meeting, probably the next regular meeting. But that was the only one in the comments here. So if any other members of the public has a comment, go ahead and give me your first name now, please. And hearing none, Will. Will, you're muted.
Pop up covered my microphone. We're now going to recess our normal meeting and go into an executive session for, I'm going to say, a half an hour. We're going to be discussing litigation with legal counsel, possible litigation with legal counsel. And there will be no decisions made when we come out of executive session. So, Sean, can you keep the time for us, please?
You bet. And give me just a second to set everything up here.
Okay. Okay, we're out of our executive session. We did not have any public comments. So if there's no other business to come before the board, we will adjourn, if that's okay with everyone.
Thank you, everybody.
Good. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Thanks, Don and Ron.